Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode with Esther Szabo. Today we're going to be talking about her experiences in her business and in her life. And this is just really getting to know her and her business and what she does and what she enjoys doing. How are you doing, Esther?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much, Eric.
Wonderful. All right. Well, let's get right into it. Why did you decide to work in financial services? And tell us just a little bit about your history.
So when I was a young child, I remember being pretty happy-go-lucky until I was about 8. And then when I was 8 years old, it was really clear to me that something was not okay with the family's finances. And my mom would actually share with me her concerns about this confusing thing. I didn't understand what it was, but it was called a mortgage. And her concerns with whether my dad would be able to make the payments. And I heard this a lot. So being a good reader, I had read the Little House on the Prairie books. And a lot of the theme in the Little House on the Prairie books is how the family sticks together and all works together to survive this difficult frontier life. So I went to the neighbors and asked if I could help with any chores, because I thought, well, I will contribute to the household. And they did, and they gave me a job, and I asked for my hourly wage, and I got that, and I was really excited to go home and tell my mom that I was helping out. And we grew up in a pretty affluent suburb of Manhattan, and she was really upset with me because basically I was revealing that something wasn't all perfect in this house that literally had a white picket fence. However, she didn't stop conveying to me her concerns. So I really kept working all the way through the time when about 7 years later, my dad, even though my parents had paid off our home by that point, my father self-published a book, and it was a book on economics because he was an economist. Both of my parents were college educated. They're Depression era parents. And they both put themselves through school and got degrees, but personal finance was not what they got the degree in. And my father financed this book through taking out a home equity loan, or what the equivalent of a home equity loan was in the mid-70s. My mom wasn't aware of this, and the book didn't sell. And eventually this led to my parents declaring bankruptcy when I was about 16. And everything that had to do with college or future for me was gone. And it led to a real tumble down. We lost the house. I lived with them in an apartment. We lost that apartment. And I just decided I was done with education and school. And I really just wanted to keep working because I had kept working all these years and I had amassed a little nest egg. And so I left home not long after I graduated high school at 17 and worked about 600 miles away in another state. And I didn't want to do college, wasn't interested. I just wanted to work and have my own money. And how I ended up in the financial services industry, of all things, is I did start college at 21. And one of my electives about 4 years in, because I worked all the way through school, so it took me 5.5 years to get my degree, was a class on personal finance. And it was a light bulb moment because it made it clear to me that there's not this horrible force out there that just comes and takes your house one day out from underneath you and renders your parents basically homeless. There's an actual structure to actually put together a very firm foundation for your life and be a springboard. And it was a huge inspiration for me to help other people and learn how to do this and manage through life's ups and downs. So that's how I ended up in financial services.
Wow, that sounds like it impacted you greatly. So how do you carry that over to who you work with? What's your specialty?
My specialty is working with women in transition due to loss of a spouse from death or divorce, or also for sudden money events, such as an inheritance or success in business through executive compensation like stock options or sale of a business. And the way that it transfers over, I'd worked with women who were widows for many years, but I also additionally lost my husband 4 years ago. He was diagnosed with heart failure at age 56 and passed away at 59, just before his 59th birthday. And that how it carries over is growing up in that way, there was always this feeling that the rug was going to get pulled out. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened to me. And when I'm working with women in transition, and then when my husband died, it can feel like that same thing. Oh my gosh, I've worked so hard to do this in the experience of those who have lost a spouse, that where is my footing? Where can I land? How can I feel secure? And on the flip side, for those who come into money unexpectedly, even though everyone sees that as a happy event, it's also a feeling of the world is suddenly on its side. Like, how does this impact me? What are my choices? What's available to me? What will be a good thing to do with these money that I've received? So it really, my experience of going through that from childhood and then emerging from that to create a career, and then emerging from this experience of losing my husband and that foundation of our marriage and life together, and still being very much on my two feet and living a very fulfilling life, is really a focus that I enjoy bringing to my clients as well, of walking through these different things with oneself at the center, so one does create a very fulfilling experience and not just an experience of always holding on because the rug might get pulled out again.
Can you expand on what you actually do for your clients? I mean, you give a great overhead view, but can you kind of unpack some of that for us?
Sure. For every client, what we do is a customized financial plan. And what that means is a lot of work. There's the technical part of financial planning, which is looking at things like, okay, well, how much do you have in assets? Are you earning an income? What are your expenses? What's your tax situation? What are your insurance needs? What's your estate planning needs? All those pieces, and putting it together to draw out where is this road leading you today? And then we do different scenarios with that. What are what if things, both on the positive, what if you have more income than you expect, or the challenging things, what if you have more expenses than you expect, or what if you have a long-term care need? So all of those are the technical pieces. The other parts that we do is sit down and have real conversations about, well, what is your idea of a fulfilling life? I know what mine is, but yours may be very different. And many people, the interesting thing for prospective clients is they all assume that everyone's got the same need. Well, I basically don't want to run out of money. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me, what are the things you want to spend money on? And what is the meaning behind that for you? So there are conversations about that, about those types of goals, what's really meaningful. There are conversations, especially for those who are in transition, to help break down what is important to do now and take care of, and what we have time to do later, and really help structuring the priorities with a client. And then we ongoing work with clients enacting that financial plan, putting it into place, and building the investment portfolio around that, and then implementing that portfolio so that as we go along in months and years after this transition, we monitor with the client what really happens. Because we all put together our best efforts now for what we think things will look like. But I imagine it might be true for you too, Eric, that when you look at what you had expected your life to, how it would you would have expected it to unfold a year ago in July of 2017 to July of 2018, I bet some things might be a bit different. And that is true for many people. It doesn't necessarily hold exactly true what they expected to happen. And even if their own life is the same, the market environment may have changed or be changing, and it has to stay in alignment with the planning so that should unexpected events come to pass, either in one's own life or in the market, that the whole apple cart isn't tipped over at all. We can make adjustments along the way so that the ride financially stays relatively smooth with those goals still in place.
Absolutely. So can you tell us, give us a good definition of what is your ideal client?
Well, I have to start, unfortunately, with the minimum liquid net worth. And I say unfortunately because, honestly, I want to help everybody. And I also know what my limits are. I cannot help everybody. I do my best to do that. But I do have a minimum of liquid net worth minimum of $2 million. So once we get through that, it is typically a woman in transition going through those experiences that I mentioned. They have received a divorce settlement and a divorce judgment. A spouse has passed away, or it could be that a spouse has been diagnosed with an illness and that has changed their life as well, or that they are in receipt of executive compensation and an inheritance and are trying to sort out and feeling under the gun somewhat to decide what they need to do with this money. It can make people very, very anxious. And they're looking for someone to collaborate with, to work with them, to listen to them, but also help provide technical advice on what are the right next steps.
So how do you acquire these new clients?
Typically, it is through referral from other colleagues that work in the areas of estate planning, family law, or tax planning. And it can be as well often from other clients.
Okay. So what kind of client education do you provide?
I almost want you to ask one of my clients this because I have to be careful because I do love educating clients. At the end of the day, nobody is hurt more if something goes wrong than the client. So I really want them aware of what is going on in the market. What are the different pieces around things like long-term care insurance, which nobody really enjoys speaking about, but is critical. I don't sell any products. I don't sell insurance. I don't make my money buying and selling the stocks directly, so to speak. I build the portfolios, but I want to educate clients on what are the different forces going on that could undermine their plan and how we are working to limit the impact of those forces. So there's education on, I'm going to stop that there, actually, Eric.
Okay. So Esther, earlier you said that you know your limitations and we know not everybody can do everything. So how about you describe who's on your team and what do they do?
Thank you. I love talking about my team. So I have a team of two other full-time members and one part-time. And Sean Mackin is on my team as the client services lead. And he works with the clients in terms of making sure all the paperwork and all the transactions and all the transfers goes smoothly for a client. That's on a very basic level, but it's so critical. You can have a wonderful financial plan, a wonderful strategy, but if a wire transfer doesn't go correctly, that is terrible for a client. Sean makes sure all of these things work well and efficiently and effectively without having to go back to the client for additional needs or anything else to make sure things work successfully for them. Additionally, I have Hedel Saki, who is also a certified financial planner and has an MBA. And she works with me on all clients regarding the financial planning. So she puts in all the information into the software that we use, but it's so much more important than the software. You have to be able to look at the software and what it's saying and make sure that the data is correct and it's putting out the correct information. So she works with clients on their data. She also works with the adjunct people that we have beyond those that are directly hired by Gates Pass Advisors. We have a wonderful team through SEI, which is our investment arm, to develop asset allocation structures and portfolio manager due diligence for the investment portion. And Hedel and Sean both work with SEI as well. And then our other part-time member is Janet Yu, who is our part-time administrative assistant, supporting all the other back office tasks that go on for the firm.
All right, that's great. So what do you do in the community?
I have a role with the Los Altos Community Foundation. I'm on their investment committee, making sure that they're investing the donations that they receive appropriately for the needs of the foundation. And I also work with a lot of women who are getting sober. I'm a sober woman myself. I've been sober over 31 years. And it's really important that I share that with other women who would like to be relieved of that addictive compulsion and really live an extraordinary life themselves. So that is certainly something that is volunteer, and I love to do it. I love to see these women just come alive from emerging from really painful situations in their life.
Okay. Now, you touched on it earlier, but can you let the audience know what designations or advanced education do you have?
What I have is the certification in financial planning, the CFP designation, which is a challenging designation to attain. I think the last statistics that I saw were that 50% of those who take the exam, who sit for it the first time, don't pass. And we're also required to maintain continuing education. We actually are required to have more continuing education credits than attorneys. So I love my attorney colleagues, but we are required to have more continuing ed than they do. And that is my main designation. I'm also working on completing a designation in financial life transitions.
Okay, so what is your financial philosophy?
This is almost a big question for me. Financial philosophy, I would say, are some very basic, simple things, which is don't spend more than you earn, to be sure you have reserves, that when these unexpected things happen, which they will, for the financial crisis that we went through in 2007, 8, 9, our clients, we went through it. It was a difficult time, but because there were reserves set up, we could leave the stock market money untouched. And that is part of my philosophy as well, to be sure you have a structure in place before you launch your investment portfolio, to make sense of why the investment portfolio is set up as it is. There's all sorts of wonderful ways to invest, but if it's something that you need to pay your bills partially, you want to be sure to have a good asset allocation structure in place so that when the unexpected happens, you can leave that stock market money alone.
Perfect. Okay. So I appreciate you sharing a little bit about your business. I mean, that was a great picture that you painted for us, but the second half of this podcast, I really want to kind of get into more of who is Esther personally. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. So first question, when you're not working, what do you do for fun?
There's so many things to do, Eric. That's the challenge. And I love being outdoors is huge for me. I love to be outdoors. I happen to live in Northern California where it's beautiful out. And I do go to a gym for training, but I don't go to a gym for cardio. I want to be outdoors. I think it's almost criminal that we have such a beautiful environment here and then we go inside under more fluorescent lights to exercise. So I love hiking, being outdoors. I also really enjoy paper crafting, which I always cringe a little bit about because I imagine people think paper crafting, that's, you know, for my grandmother or something. But what it is doing rubber stamping cards, and you get to play with paper and color and all sorts of different things. And if you make a mistake, unlike the work that I do, nobody's life is impacted. So all you need to do if you make a mistake when you're making a card is flip the card over and start again or take another piece of paper. So I really enjoy that. I really enjoy being, my mom is 94 years old and lives a couple hours away, and I enjoy a lot being with her. It's funny, I look back now, I couldn't wait to leave home when I was 17. I forgot that the reason I was living there was because I was in high school, because frankly, I wasn't going very much. Couldn't wait to get away from my mom and dad. And now I can't wait to be with her again. I really enjoy being with her and my sister and other friends as well.
Great. So this may be part of that. If you had all the money in the world, what would you do?
This is one of the questions I actually ask to my clients. So I've gone through this myself, and my husband, David, and I went through this question and some other things also, which really changed how I did my practice, actually, because of his responses. But if I had all the money in the world, I honestly, and this is something my clients say too, I don't know if I would change a whole lot. I really love the work that I do. I would, gosh, that's such a, it's hard. I hadn't prepared for this, so. But I have answered it. So I don't know if I would change a lot. I would have more, I would love to create a foundation. I have a kind of a mini foundation that I do through my donor advised fund, but I'd love to create a foundation that would really help people in this area this area is terrible for the housing prices. The housing is really out of reach for so many more people, so many people who are considered typically middle class and cannot buy a house here at all. And I would love to do something around housing to support those people who support all of us here, teachers and firefighters and police and restaurant workers and so much, to be able to have a housing community here that they could be local and not have to drive 2 hours to get in and out of the Bay Area to work. That would be one thing I would do.
All right. So what is your idea of success?
I love this question too, because I work in personal finance and because I have $2 million liquid net worth minimum, so much of success can get hooked with, well, I don't have $2 million, so I'm not good enough to work with you. Or it has to be around money. Working and living in Silicon Valley, everybody knows a story of somebody who hit it big. And it's hard for people not to feel less than. And my idea of success is certainly you want to have financial well-being. I love the idea of success being that you have emotional well-being as well, because you need that to ride through transition, and that you're healthy, you're physically healthy. I have had clients who have had a wonderful net worth statement, but have had challenges with their family, challenges feeling emotionally well, and it didn't matter. It's really important to have a peaceful sense of well-being in one's life, harmony with the family members that we have, harmony in our friendship, being of service in our community. All of those make for a successful life. I know going through the loss of my husband that it is, I feel successful today. I don't have necessarily what other people may have financially. I'm very solid, but I'm really not measuring it that way. I love the richness of my life in terms of the relationships, the hobbies, the peace of mind that I have.
So what is the one thing you recommend most to clients, families, and friends?
It's often around safety nets. I would say, how is your safety net for things like if you aren't able to work for a period of time? I don't like insurance. I don't like paying for something that I hope I never have to use. But I often do talk about the importance of insurance, of having disability insurance or long-term care insurance, and also cash reserves set aside. I think often, because we've all been told, okay, save into your 401k, max out your 401k and your IRA so you have that for retirement. I look at that and say, maybe you don't max all of that out, so you save something outside, or you purchase some insurance. Yes, it's more taxable income, but one of the mistakes that I feel that has been made over the years is people have these wonderfully large 401ks and not very much outside, so that when something unexpected happens, they have to pull from that 401k or that IRA rollover once they've retired to pay those expenses. And that's all taxable money then. And that's very difficult to navigate through as well. So it's often around reserves. What's underneath you supporting you? Focus on that first.
All right. It's time to get a little deeper here. Name one thing most people don't know about you.
I know. And I feel like I live a pretty open book. This is
difficult. There's got to be one thing. I know you got it in there.
I love music. I love going to concerts. And that is something that is part of my budget each year, is going out to see live music. It really is something that just uplifts me a lot. And I don't just put it into a quote unquote recreation bucket. I put it into a concert bucket because I want to feel comfortable knowing that I can spend this money. Concerts are not cheap anymore. And I know that, okay, I can spend, if I need to, $300 on this ticket because that's part of my budget and I really want to see that person. And I love the summer. I don't necessarily need to travel away out of the summer because all the people are touring on concert. And so that is something that I don't think I talk about too much, is my joy at hearing live music.
Yeah, let them come to you. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is your proudest achievement?
For today, I would say it really is going through the experience of losing my husband unexpectedly. Plus, it happened overseas during a cruise that it was a pretty tragic situation. And he was on life support in Moscow, Russia. And we had to wait 2 weeks before he was cleared for travel on a medevac plane. And going through that time and navigating a variety of things that happened, like the Russian hospital charging up my credit card and needing to get that resolved, needing to find out how we do the medevac, my husband's across town in a hospital and ICU on life support, getting back, and then rebuilding my life after that, and being in a place where I have a practice that I love, I have a good support system that I can give back to at this point, but I was able to receive. And I think receiving, especially for strong, independent women, can be a very difficult thing. But I was able to just allow people to be there for me so that I could navigate through that and be in a very, very fulfilling and happy space at this point. I still have my moments. Certainly grieving is a very unusual phenomenon, how it's not an A to Z thing. It comes up, it'll hit you when you just don't expect it, or even when I do expect it, and just navigating through that to where I am just really in a peaceful, excited place a lot of the time now. I feel like that's a great achievement.
Wonderful. So you have a platform here, and you have the attention of a large audience. So who should listen to your podcast, and how should they reach out to you at your office?
I'm going to say, first of all, any woman who wants to know more about personal finance, who wants to get a sense of how am I doing? Am I doing the right things? Who wants to hear discussions with other advisors in the areas of tax and estate planning and insurance to learn more about these different areas, and who wants to hear from another woman who's walked a difficult road and is successful in that, those people should definitely listen to the podcast.
All right. And how should they reach you?
They can reach me through email at esther@gatespassadvisors.com. I don't know, Eric, should I spell all that out? I don't know. info@gatespassadvisors.com. Or the office there, the website is gatespassadvisors.com. You can do a contact me there. And the phone number is there too.
Fantastic. All right. Do you have any closing thoughts for us?
I'm really excited to be doing the podcast. I think one of the challenges I have is that like I said, there's so many people I want to help, and there's so much to be that's going on in the world right now. We're in a tumultuous time in our world, in our country, in the economy and the markets. And I really want to be there as a voice of reason during challenging times so that people can stay the course of their plan or say, I don't really have a plan. What do I need to be thinking about with this? And so I really am excited to be a voice available right now.
That's great. So, all right. Thank you so much for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.